And we've done a few other mods like that, but we haven't had any big testing since we started.
How is when the 47 first came out, I remember you had to have a lot of runway. Today you don't need a lot of runway. In fact, when the Dash 8 came in here the other day,
yeah.
How many of you were here when the 7478 came in on, I think it was Monday? Where were you people?
Did you see it take off at least?
Well, yeah. I mean, you didn't hear it.
Yeah, yeah.
That was the thing, you didn't hear it.
Yeah.
Compared to the 707s back in the 50s and 60s, maybe Troy, you can answer this, I'm not sure. But the jets today, unlike Concorde, you heard that from here, like the F-22 was flying tonight, you heard those birds.
Mm-hmm.
Is that by demand?
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. Especially in the, I'll say, noise-sensitive areas of the world. Congested airports like Heathrow in the UK, where you have restrictions on your noise level in terms of the time of day you can come in. You can't be too early. That's when you're right. Flying across the Atlantic. If you are, you got to do circles if you're a certain noise category of an airplane. We're starting to see this also in proliferate throughout the world. In Hong Kong, you see a lot of noise restrictions. So when we started off on the Dash 8, that was an absolute requirement, where we intentionally designed the engines. In particular, you'll notice the chevrons on the back, the teeth. Those are really designed for community noise purposes. The chevrons that are on a 787, like the Dash 10 that was here yesterday, that's actually for cabin noise. It's an interior noise solution. Ours was really for community noise. And then everything on the flap, everything we did in terms of cleaning up the trailing edge and reducing airframe noise as much as we could, it was absolutely intentional from day one.
Richard, we were talking, David brought it up, and I'll point this at you. When Concorde first started flying in 1970-71, she was not allowed to fly to Kennedy. She was allowed to fly into Dulles in Washington, but she was not allowed to fly into Kennedy because the theory was that it was the Port Authority, although there were environmentalists running around with saying, no, we don't want all that pollution, blah, 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 blah. And finally, the FAA was the one that in 1976, along with British Air, said, come on, let us try it. We'll prove that it's not that noisy. And Concorde made its first landing in, I want to say it was September of 76, and it didn't trigger one noise meter. When it took off, it didn't trigger one noise meter. And from that day on, Concorde was allowed to land at Kennedy. Yes, it makes noise, most planes do, but it wasn't what everybody, the doomsayers, were saying.
Yeah.
Joe, when you got to the point with the shuttle and the 747, were you satisfied before the first time she went and you went up in space, not in space, but you went up in the shuttle with the 747 as your escort? Were you satisfied with the way it worked? And what was the shuttle like back then?
Absolutely. The shuttle was a fly-by-wire flight control system, so I always felt like any of those fly-by-wire systems that you're communicating with the airplane. Of course, all pilots like to think they can communicate with what they're flying. But I always felt like I was talking to it through an interpreter, that we were, you know, there's a little bit of a delay that's very hardly perceivable until you get down close to the ground. And after you flare and you're coming into land, pilots get to be real careful talking to the airplanes, and the stick gets very busy. They don't, you know, every pilot will deny that. I mean, other guys do that, but I'm cool all the way to touchdown. But you really, the stick really does start to move around a little bit more.
We
were concerned about saturating the hydraulic control system.
What is your most memorable, never mind. What's the biggest memory you have from the 747? I'll start with you, Joe, and I'm gonna work my way down.
Actually, I think getting to drop Fitz away from the space shuttle. I'd had the privilege of flying the X-15 under the B-52, and Fitz dropped me 16 times. He always catch me wherever he could and say, I'm going to drop you again. You know, I'm just going to drop you like a hot potato. And when we separated off the top of the 740, Dick Trulli and I ahead of time decided, one of us, since I was trying to fly it, he said, I'll punch the button. he said, punched a button and said, "Fits away."
Troy, what about you? What's your best memory of the 4-7?
Well, I think my funnest memory is one of the test missions that we had. We were doing directional stability, so a lot of rudder work. And the airplane's pretty tough. And with the flaps down, there's a lot of flaps setting in slower speeds. You can get a lot of side slip on the airplane. So we were doing a side slip test to see of the air going into the cavity, into the wind stream, and away from the wind stream to see what the resonance would be. And so this particular day was about 165 knots and 30 flaps. And we got the airplane out to about 18 degrees of side slip, 18 beta, which is big, really big. You feel like you're going sideways. And as the test guys, we were pretty used to doing things like that. But in an airplane like that, it was pretty amazing. Our flight engineer that day was a stand-in who'd been a 30-year 747 captain. And all of his books on his desk hit the floor. All of our water bottles went down and flew into the back. And he was freaking out and asking us, "What are you doing to my airplane?" And we were pretty happy with it at that point. But that's probably my fondest memory of that testing.
Anything you want to add, David?
Geez, fondest memory. There's so many. I can't top that one very well, I don't think, for my flight test experience. But I do have to pick on flight tests. It's probably my fondest memory thus far has been when I finally got to fly on the Dash 8 as an engineer. I was in the back. We ended up doing roller coasters. In fact, Tom Emmerich, who I think is out here on the audience, there's Tom.
Where are you, Tom?
He was in the flight deck flying that day and got to go do roller coasters. And we pulled about got close to 2 Gs, if I remember right, that day. And so we're just, you know, doing up and down right off the coast of Washington there over in the Pacific. And just watching the wing work and everything I had worked on for 8 years up to that point finally kind of come home and be a part of. It was a lot of fun.
Richard, I got to believe your biggest memory is what happened at Chicago.
I guess it was, yeah. although I was one of the youngest pilots ever to qualify in the 747 back in end of 1971. And in those days, the 100 had, or the Dash 1, the 100, had very poor JT9 engines. The engines are giving us a lot of trouble. And I think in the first 6 trips I ever did as a pilot, although as a second officer rather than as first officer, I witnessed, I think, 3 engine failures in flight. And I thought, is this what being an airline pilot's all about? Is this what flying at Boeing's all about? But obviously, the Pratt & Whitney developed the JT9 into a very fine engine, and all that was history. But I still have a lot of memories of the engine failures early on in the life of the airplane. And the 200 series we got the Rolls-Royce RB211s in, and the RB211s went through upgrades till they ended up with a Dash. The H version, I think, of the RB211, and we were finding that the plane would climb performance-wise above its aerodynamic limit with the wing, and we were great. We were going to Hong Kong, we could climb up to 39,000 feet without a problem until we got to about 38,000 feet. We ran out of speed in which to fly. The engines had lots of performance, but we were right on the boundary between the high speed and the low speed buffet. So initially with the 200s, we had to be very careful how we flew it. That was all resolved with the 400s, you know, and the power weight matched the airplane much better. But the 200 was a really nice performer.
Finally, I want to talk about the 747 is no longer being made a passenger. It's going to be around as a cargo plane for a long time. And Airbus this year announced that it was going to discontinue making the 380. Mm-hmm. 380 was here 10 years ago. Where is aviation going, David? I mean, we were going for big in the 60s, and now we're shrinking. And the 787 is a beautiful bird.
Well, and we were going for big even in the 90s and then later in the 2000s. I think, you know, the thing that to remember, at least in the history books, is even in the late 90s, it was a joint venture actually between Airbus and Boeing to look at what we called the new large airplane. It was a 500-plus-seater, It's when the hubs were really jam-packed, especially the Chicago's, the Heathrow's, et cetera. And we're studying together because we're worried about the market size in terms of, okay, is it really, can we really compete effectively? And we parted ways, unfortunately, well, fortunately, I guess, depending how you want to look at it. You know, and frankly, at that time, Boeing's strategy changed. I think what we really saw in the marketplace was a shift in terms of more point-to-point and less of a hub and spoke system, the traditional fly to O'Hare and then go fly your next connection to another city pair. And I think that's, it's amazing when you fly around the world now between what the long-range 777s, the 300ER, the 777-300ER, and now the 787, which has really opened up the Pacific. Now you really, it's amazing the point-to-point destinations you can have all across North America, Europe, and Asia that just never existed in the previous model. And I think that was it's been a fundamental shift in our industry.
I think the economics of the 787 are so good,
right,
that whereby before airlines couldn't afford to go from
point to point.
Now the economics are so good. I see British Airways opening up routes all over the place, yep, using the 787. I haven't flown it, but it seems to me,
yes, sir,
to be a superb performer.
That's right.
And the bean counters are controlling a lot.
Well, and the flying public too, because obviously that's where the demand is coming. But yep, to your point, you know, British Airways is now going to Charleston, yeah, and much smaller markets that they would never have dreamed of doing,
right,
a decade, if not even further, before. And it really is a testament to the superb performance and economics of the new commercial airplanes.
The foresight of Boeing, yeah, in going down that route. You know, Airbus is very much behind on the A350, and going down,
true,
the A380 route was obviously a big mistake. And I think Boeing had the foresight to go, mm-hmm, the correct direction.
Yep.
We've got to wrap her up. I want to thank Joe Engel, our astronaut. Joe, it's so glad you're here. Troy Asher, our test pilot from NASA. David Laughing from Boeing. And our Concorde pilot, Richard Westray. Ladies and gentlemen, let's give them a nice round of applause.
Thank you.